Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I've got a great interview to bring to you today. Senator Rand Paul joins me. Senator, thanks so much.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
So it's funny that I get to talk to you today. We're talking on Tuesday, but you actually just today had a bit of a viral encounter with Dr. Fauci, your very good friend at this point, where you openly explored the question of whether he lied to Congress, which is a crime. Do you think that Dr. Fauci lied to Congress, and what is that all about?
Yeah, I think from the very beginning, there's been a cover-up of any links of the virus's origin to the lab. If you look at his emails early on, there's this urgency, there's this frantic urgency to his assistant. Look at this paper. Oh my God, he's not, you don't hear all of this, but you get this sense of urgency. And the urgency was because it was dawning on him that they were doing gain of function research, taking animal viruses and recombining them with other viruses to make them more contagious in humans. Some of these viruses are only contagious in animals and they have to be modified somehow. They can evolve that way in nature, or you can modify them in the lab so they infect humans, and that's called gain of function research. He realized they were doing it. And so in my questioning, though, today and last month, he's like, oh, no, that's not really gain of function. But you notice we never really got to him telling us exactly why it's not gain of function. But at one point, I was interrupting him and saying, are you saying that when you take an animal virus and you make it more transmissible in humans, that's not gain of function? And that's what he basically is alleging, that that isn't gain of function. I think it is on the nuance of that he's saying if the researcher couldn't have predicted that this was going to happen. But the bottom line is, it is pretty predictable when you combine the viruses the way they do. They're actually testing it to see if it will grow in humans. That's their whole purpose in doing it. And we're doing this in the United States as well. They do this in Galveston and North Carolina. So I think there's a danger that an even worse virus could escape than the one that did. And most of the evidence right now, it's not conclusive, but most of the evidence points towards that this virus came from the lab.
Yeah, and I think that's just why we need accountability. And it's just obviously clear that Dr. Fauci is not being transparent about this. But it's not the first thing that he hasn't been transparent with the people about, whether it's talking about masks and changing positions on schools. Are you satisfied with the extent to which Dr. Fauci has been honest with the American people during this pandemic to date?
I think the nicest thing I could think to say about him would be that he isn't transparent. I would probably go much further. I think he lacks incredible judgment, and that's probably the worst one of his characteristics. So in 2012, he said that, yes, the research that's being done, this gain of function research, there's a danger that if a scientist were to get the disease themselves, they could transmit it to the public and it could become a worldwide pandemic. And his conclusion was, but the research is more important than the risk we take of that. And so really, that's the judgment. If this came from the lab, that's the lack of judgment that's gotten us to where we are now. But one of the viruses they routinely are experimenting with in the Wuhan lab is the SARS virus. This is the coronavirus from 2004. It had a 15% mortality. The one we're dealing with now, 4 million people have died with a 1% mortality. So as bad as this one is, it's got 1% mortality. Can you imagine 15% mortality? They're experimenting with the SARS virus, which there's some irony to this, but some, you know, consistency as well, that sometimes the more deadly viruses aren't very transmissible. Just happens to be that way in nature sometimes. So the SARS virus was much more deadly than COVID, but much less transmissible. But if you take the SARS virus from 2004 and you start adding different S proteins from other coronaviruses, you can make it more transmissible. That sounds like an incredibly foolish thing to be doing. But because Fauci is all in on that we're going to get great knowledge here, it's worth the risk. But that's just a terrible judgment. We shouldn't leave the future of mankind to the judgment of one bureaucrat. So I've got a lot of problems with him, and we're going to continue to go around with this because I think he's made some of the worst decisions that have cost our economy trillions of dollars, but he's also costing us our freedom. Even though he doesn't make the laws that mandate masks, his pronouncements then become the CDC policy, and then become the edicts that all the governors, you know, may voluntarily be following. But his bad ideas are infectious, no pun intended.
Yeah, and it does.
No pun intended, I guess.
Yeah, I got you. But it does give me a little bit of pause to think that the federal government, and Fauci is by no means the only one, he's just a very high-profile example, the federal government has at every turn botched the response to this crisis, right? The CDC and the FDA with testing kits, with masks, with obviously you've gotten into the gain-of-function research and the initial response and everything that set this up. If looking forwards, should we rely on the federal government to do better next time? Or is this a sign that we really can't trust the public health bureaucracy to save the day?
You know, if you live in a free society or believe in a free society, each individual makes their own healthcare decisions. Now, there might be a role for government to set an example or get information out. So like on the vaccine, I do think that the statistics are pretty good that over 65, the disease is much worse than any possible side effects of the vaccine. So my personal persuasive advice is, yeah, I'd take the vaccine if you're over 65, or I'd take the vaccine really if you're over 40 and overweight. And there are varying degrees of that. You know, if you're 55, 58, I mean, there are risk factors that I think definitely the disease is worse than the vaccine. But I think the advice needs to be accurate, needs to be good. There's a lot of advice that could save lives that I've never heard Dr. Fauci talk about at all. It's well known that monoclonal antibodies can rescue you from COVID if you take them before you get sick. So if he really were a public health doctor that cared about public health, you'd see him on television every night and he'd be talking about, if you're developing bronchitis and you're getting a little bit sicker and you have COVID, there's a window of time, but you have to go into the doctor before you get too sick to get monoclonal antibodies. And this will save lives. President Trump got the monoclonal antibodies. Giuliani got them. Chris Christie got them. Thousands of Americans have got them. The studies are good. There's even studies showing that if you're 80 years old and your spouse gets COVID and you're going to stay to take care of them, and that's what many elderly couples will probably do, no matter what you tell them, the one staying to take care of the sick spouse can take the monoclonal antibodies not even being sick, and it actually either prevents them from getting a serious infection or may even prevent them from even getting a symptomatic infection at all. There's a lot of good things that government could do through advice, persuasion, example, public service announcements. But instead we get, you know, Fauci out there wearing two masks made of somebody's undershirt that don't work at all. There's no science behind it. In fact, he's teaching you the opposite. He's telling you if your spouse or an elderly grandmother has COVID and you want to go see them, put up your T-shirt over your face and you'll be fine. But that actually teaches you risky behavior when the T-shirt doesn't work. Instead, he should be telling you the honest to God truth is, in very careful circumstances, the N95 mask could protect and help you. And that's what they use in the hospital. No doctor wears cut up T-shirt or undergarments over their face. In the hospital, it's COVID-95 is the N95 is all they wear in the hospital, but they throw it away immediately. They wear gloves and they throw those away too. So if you were to wear an N95, the only way it would work is if you never touched it. So I want to meet the person out in the public who wears one every day because they're really, really tight. They're uncomfortable, who never touches their N95 mask and throws it away every time after they've touched it. That's why the masks don't work very well either. Even the masks that can kind of work to prevent the virus from coming in, it's almost impossible in daily routine to live your life in sort of this sterile fashion that they do in the hospital.
So I will ask, though, do you have any sympathy for Fauci in the sense that this is all incredibly complex stuff, and he has a real tough job being in charge of the response to all this? My patience with him has definitely waned. I think many Americans have. But do you have any sympathy to the people who still want to give him the benefit of the doubt, given what a terrible position, frankly, and difficult position it must be to be in charge and responding to such a big problem like this?
In the beginning of this, I said repeatedly that I didn't question his motives, that I thought his motives were good. I still think his motives are good, but I actually am starting to question the sincerity of what he's doing and that it's not all for the betterment of mankind. I think he's been covering his ass since like July 31st of 2020, in the sense that he became very alarmed that this could have come from the lab. He was getting reports of gain of function research, and he circled the wagon with this Peter Daszak, and they did come together privately through email to talk about how to put the best spin on this. So I do think that he's been giving us shades of the truth from the very beginning. But I also think that he is predictable as an elitist. People on the left believe they know better than you, and they think that the common man's too stupid to make their own decisions, so these decisions need to be made by their betters. And I truly think that he believes that he knows better. That's why when he lies to us about the mask, he's doing it for our own good. It's a noble lie when he tells you that, you know, all the masks work. He's just, you know, he's trying to keep you from buying too much of the N95 mask so that we won't have a shortage of supply in the hospital. And he's okay with lying because he thinks the lie is for the betterment of mankind. And I think that's true of a lot of the things he does is he calculates, you know, what the people need to hear. And he tells them that regardless of whether it's true.
Well, and that should give us pause about more than just Dr. Fauci, right? Because the idea from the Biden administration and Facebook is they're saying that their experts and government officials should be deciding what is misinformation and what's information. They should be deciding whether people have to go back to wearing masks. We should be making individual judgment calls for ourselves. Does the kind of hubris and fall of Dr. Fauci tell us something about the experts who think that they should be telling us how to run our lives?
Right. Well, Hayek, you know, responded in a way to talk of the, you know, having a certain group of experts who would be smart enough to run an economy that there's nobody smart enough to incorporate all that knowledge. And so when it's dispersed among the economy and you have 330 million people making economic decisions, that knowledge is dispersed, distributed, and then the good knowledge is rewarded in the supply and demand charts by those who are most efficient and maximize their profit. But that there's no way experts, you couldn't get 20 of the smartest people with IQs over 200 to run an economy because there isn't enough accumulated knowledge. And so it's a suspicion, you know, from central planners that they can somehow have enough knowledge versus the dispersion of knowledge, which doesn't appear to be planned. But they're truly in the left, you know, is always made fun of sort of like the invisible hand. But there is something real. The invisible hand is the nature of man. The nature of man and woman is to maximize their own self-interest, to maximize their reward. And so they work hard to minimize their costs and to maximize what they can sell. And all that working together, as long as there's not any violence involved, ends up creating the amazing economy, the amazing wealth of capitalism. But it's the same for science and things like that. We now have a groupthink on COVID because Fauci controls all the funding. And I tell people this wasn't the first example. This started with climate change. All the climate change money is controlled by government. There are no skeptics allowed. You're not even allowed on television. I don't know if we're allowed to do this podcast, because if you're a skeptic over anything that comes down the pike, you're not allowed to be an acceptable society anymore. So climate change or alarmism was the beginning. The COVID sort of regime is the next. But it gets worse from here if we're not careful. This is the big debate going on in Washington about what to do about speech. Now, I tend to believe that there's a lot of outlets for speech. And if you don't like what someone's doing, turn them off or go to a different channel. But there's a growing consensus on right and left just to break up these social media companies that seem to have so much power. I frankly try to tell people the opposite for young libertarians, particularly if you're a coder, go out and create the next Facebook. There's $1 billion dangling in front of you, because half the people are unhappy. They think Twitter's unfair and they think Facebook is unfair, and they probably are unfair. They are leftists. They are restricting access to things. Go create a competitor and someone will be fabulously rich because half the public already wants that competitor and it hadn't even been created yet. But this is a big debate, and I come down more on the libertarian side that if you don't like them, don't use them. But I'm really not for telling the New York Times they have to run my op-eds or telling Twitter they have to take my tweets. I'm in the process of actually setting up my own website, libertytree.com. And our goal is to be a news aggregator site and maybe be someday like a Drudge or bigger, where we have a group of liberty voices there. And if you want to go one-stop shopping for a bunch of different liberty voices, you click over there and then you'll get these voices. And it'll be like Twitter in the sense that we'll have short one-sentence comments linked to stories. But part of the beauty of Twitter is that you can read people, you like some of their other stuff, and they link to stories that might interest you. And so it could be a great news aggregator site in the same way that Drudge was so popular for so long. And yet it really wasn't a very good link. You know, it had a bunch of names of authors. It was sort of a novel in like 1990 or something, you know. But over time, it really wasn't that novel, but still had this enormous crowd. I think there could be a news aggregator site that goes around. We're still somewhat dependent on the app stores, you know, Android and Apple. But I do think that there are other avenues. And if they try to block more of us will go somewhere else. You know, there are people competing with YouTube. Rumble is competing with YouTube. Bongino Report, you know, he's involved in a lot of this stuff. There are going to be other avenues. And the worse they get, the more of these new avenues will pop up.
Yeah, and I appreciate that your voice will not be blocked. Senator Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Brad. Yeah.